Welcome to Season 2 of The Voice Behind the Pen, hosted by author and screenwriter S.C. Dickens. Before we move into this new season, we'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, following, subscribing, rating, and sharing Season 1. Keep sending in your feedback as it helps us get better at delivering a quality show for you all to enjoy. A special thanks to all of the guests from Season 1, Freeze, Tony Hale III, Mark Six Mitchell, Empress Rolanda, William Young, Keith Lakeen Powell, Victor L. Martin, John Alexander, Brianna Cole, and Marcus Massey. Thank you all for coming on and sharing your expertise, mindset, and wisdom. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send SC an email via the email link at www.theauthorscdickens.com. While you're on the site, be sure to check out SC's ghostwriting services and other works on the store page. If you'd like to advertise on the show, or you'd like production work for any of your projects, send me an email at faxtheproducer@gmail.com. That's fax with a Z. So, as usual, kick back, grab whatever your go-to is to let loose, and please enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Voice Behind the Pen podcast. I'm your host, author, and screenwriter, S.C. Dickens. In today's episode, I will explore the extraordinary journey of a writer who has turned her trials into triumph. I am honored to feature Monique S. Hall, a true embodiment of resilience and redemption. From a promising star as an all-American athlete to navigating the treacherous waters of criminal underworld, Monique's life has been a roller coaster of highs and lows. Despite facing unimaginable challenges, she emerged victorious, penning her debut novel, Two Tears in a Bucket, during a period of incarceration, a powerful testimony to the transformation power of storytelling. Since then, Monique's star has continued to rise, captivating readers and individuals titans, along with her gripping narrative and unwavering determination. As the co-founder of MBP Publications and the visionary behind the largest Black-owned bookstore in the United States, Monique has not only reshaped the literary landscape, but also championed diverse and empowered within the industry. Join us as we explore Monique's journey from adversity to acclaim, from the halls of accommodation to the red carpet of success, from her unbreaking ground collaboration with renowned authors and celebrities to her pioneering efforts in film production. Monique Impacts knows no boundaries. Let's welcome our guests. Good evening, Monique. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. I wanted to thank you for coming on to the show. You know, on Monday nights, we interview an author, and on Wednesday nights, we interview somebody in the movie industry. And with today being Monday, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story with us tonight.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right. So I want to ask you a question. Sure. Can you share a little bit about your journey from being a promising athlete to navigating through the world of literature and publishing?
Sure. Books were not, I always read books, but I never thought that I would be an author. My mother, we read a lot, you know, because I traveled a lot. My father was in the Army. And then once he came out of the Army, we moved, I guess, basically from Detroit, Florida, Georgia, Texas, and then back to Florida. And so I would, my base by the ninth grade, I was in Florida, and we just loved to read. So I got friends probably maybe like in the ninth grade, but prior to that, books were my friends. So I've always been actually reading was my passion. Writing became that after the fact, but reading, I first fell in love with reading before I was ever a writer.
Okay. What inspired you to write Two Tears in a Bucket?
Well, I played sports. I was All-American in basketball, and I lost my brother, or my godbrother, during the time when I was at Payne. I was a drug dealer, went bad. My ex-boyfriend killed him. And so for therapy, I never could really shake it. Still haven't shook it, but I couldn't shake it at the time. So they had made a suggestion that I write about it. And so I wrote the book, not knowing that it was going to be a book. It was just therapy. And later it turned on into a book. And that's how Two Tears came about.
Okay. How did your partnership with Rodney evolve into creating MPP Productions? No, publications.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. It came years afterwards. I wrote Two Tears first, and I was picked up. I went independent with Two Tears. I met Quan. There used to be a thing called the BEA, and it's the Book Expo of America, and it's in New York at the Jacob Javits Center. So when I put the book in, when I took the therapy and made it a book, I went to what they call the Black Pavilion, but it's because it's a Random House and Macmillan Group, Hachette, St. Martin Press, they're all there. They're the big people. And then in the back of it, they used to have a Black Authors Pavilion that used to be ran by a guy named Tony Rose. And so I didn't really necessarily know books. I just knew business at the time. Because I always used to sell things ever since I was a kid. You know, it could be push-ups, candy. It didn't matter. You know, whatever, I could sell it. So I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to sell my book. So like you were speaking about in a private conversation about the galleys, I didn't know when you went there that you had to have book galleys. I just had a poster myself. I had been working with Freeway Rick Ross at the time, Dutch from Kwame Teague, Terry Woods Dutch, a guy named Jimmy the Saint, and a crazy guy named Relentless Aaron that I had teamed up with in the beginning. I was the only girl. Most of them were all incarcerated. All of them were incarcerated except for me and Relentless. And Rick was coming home. So I was really writing Rick's book. But long story short, they said we had to have galleys. So what is now FedEx office, formerly Kinko's. And Kinko's, they had a Kinko's inside of the Jacob Javits Center, and I printed out some galleys, or what you call galleys, and they were spiral ring. So I printed like 100 of them out, put them on the table, and this is supposed to be an event where you're supposed to get a book away to the different publishers that come around. I couldn't afford to give the books away. I only had $100, and you know, it cost so much to print them back in the day, just at, you know, the Kinko's. So I kept, like, you know, I had them in a box, and I put some on the table, and I would do, like, book orders. And I don't know if you, are you familiar with Carol Mackey from Black Expressions?
Carol Mackey.
Are you familiar with Black Expressions back in the day? They used to do the hardback covers?
No, I'm not.
Club. Okay, so a long time ago, it was a book, you would see people get the Carl Weber books and hardback, just different kind of books that would come out. And I was, she was the founder of that. So she came by the booth first, and she took a copy. And then, are you familiar with Nikki Turner?
Yes, I am. Very.
Okay, so Nikki came and got, or she came by and spoke to me, and then she left. And then I left, and I had like a little list I had made, you know, for like my callbacks and that kind of stuff. So when I came back the very next day, all my books were gone. And I was like, oh my God, I can't afford to print out any more books. And Nikki came up and she said, I got your book, Karen got your book, and a whole bunch of other people got your book. And basically she signed me. And when she signed me, she gave me a book deal with Random House. And when I left from the Jacob Javits Center on my own independently, I ended up in Publish Weekly next to Wahida Clark for Street Lit. It was the urban side of what was really, it was the new person that came out, and I was introduced as that. So I met Quan, all the people that you know now, the Quan, this guy named Jihad, that kind of, are you familiar with Jihad, Preacher Boy Blues? He was on the Carl Weber's first authors.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I know him. Carl Weber is, and right. Quan and all of them.
Okay.
And Relentless Quan, Aaron and all of them. Yeah.
And LaJill Hunt. It was a lot of us. Michelle Moore, I met her. Nikki Turner. And my book career, it just sprang. Probably when you said you came in 2005. And
yeah.
My book actually really published independently, I think 2007 or 8. And then 2009, I was with Nikki by then. With Random House.
Yeah, I'm coming from the book fair in New York, and you know, back then, and it was like, if you wasn't, I felt like, you know, and it could have been just me perceiving it, because like I said, I was young in the game when I started, but it just seemed like the information wasn't as freely as it is given now, and I think that the internet plays a lot with that. You know,
it does. Well, I can say this was, it was a grind back in the day. Internet was still out because, you know, Bill Gates' internet was out back then. I really think it was harder for urban per se than it was necessarily books. We didn't have like the ebooks, you didn't have the audio books. You knew that when you went to the events, like I guess you're speaking of like Harlem. Is that what you said? The Harlem Book Fair?
Yes, the Harlem Book Fair. Yes, ma'am.
That's a different grind. That's an outside grind. That's a hustle. That's a chilling circle. And I love it. That was back in the day. It was, I met Quanis Miller there. Quan was there. Ashton Jaquavi used to be there. Carl Weber were there. That was our Soul Train of books. Yeah. What I was speaking of prior to that would have been the Grammys of book, which is the BEA. It's the book. And so a lot of us didn't come because it was so expensive. But you had pioneers like Kara Mackey, Tony Rose, Rashonda was there, Zane, who you mentioned. And, you know, I worked heavily with her a lot. She was there. You had everyone, you know, your T Styles, they were there. J.M. Benjamins, you know, the heart of what black books in urban used to be. Victoria Christopher Murray and Rashonda and Kimberly Lawson Roby were considered the Christian fiction in the beginning. And then later on people realized and they didn't want to be pegged Christian fiction. They want to be compared contemporary fiction. And I think they probably were the pioneers as it related to just, the mass fiction, contemporary reading, women's fiction, that sort of thing. Your Nikki Turners, your Zanes, your Terry Woods. Of course, Zane was a pioneer of her own. And Nora Ray, you remember them? They were considered the eroticas. So your Quan, Ashton Jaquavis, T Styles, Vicky Stringers, those were your urbans. So yeah. I come from that. I come from the beginning of when urban became commercialized. And it could, you can't forget Omar Tyree, Relentless Aaron, any of those. They, you know, Treasure Blue,
yes.
All of those, were, you know. So everybody kind of played an intricate role into what we have now become. It's a different ball game. It's quicker. You know, people can get to the books easier because they e-read. You have a new audience with the younger crowd. But I prefer a book in my hand and, you know, but I also do not disrespect the audio or the ebooks as well.
Okay. So how do you approach projects that you select as far as authors and stuff to work with?
I'm going to be honest with you. I used to work with a lot of independent authors in the very beginning because I came in, like I said, under the Freeway Rick Rouses, the Duchess. I came in at a very high. So I never really experienced I experienced the grind, let me tell you, that I've made books from scratch to make it happen. However, when I started doing independent, I like the independence of the authors and I like new authors. But new authors have to realize it's not an instant gratification. It seems that way because you have the ebooks now and you have the internet, and they think that, like, they think most think that they, because they reach such a height on ebooks, but there is a difference between it. Ebooks hold their own, but to be able to translate from ebooks audio and then having actual book signings where you're signing the books and your audience is coming out, it is a different thing. So people like Casey Mills, B Love, your David Reavers, that kind of started a cohort who I've known since he was 16 before he ever wrote a book. Those that can transform from ebook to paperback masses, they're the ones that kind of get it. You know what I'm saying? So when I approach an author, I let them know from the beginning, you're not a Rick. It's easy for me to do a Rick Ross, a Devon Franklin, a Common, a Anthony Hamilton. They have names, okay? So they're going to instantly sell. But when you can take an author that can actually write books and put them on a platform for the grind and they gain their own audience, that's just the best thing ever. And it doesn't happen overnight. And sometimes you're instant gratification because ebooks and the internet, you know, people love your book. They get it quicker. back in the day, you had to wait till the events or go to, you remember, you had a lot of black bookstores. So you would go to bookstores and you know, sell your book and be the newbie until you made a name for yourself. So I'm funny about who I choose because I need to know that they understand that before I even take them on.
Okay. Could you tell us a little more about your experience with work with celebrities? Like,
I've had anywhere from Mama D to Commons to DMX's wife to Shira. I've had them all. You know what I'm saying? Some are good experiences. Some I wish I've never met in my life. And, you know, and it is what it is. And sometimes it's the fact that because they are celebrities, a lot don't understand the grind. I've been fortunate enough going into furthering in my career to be able to for them to understand it and know where I'm at. I've turned a lot of people down, and then I've also taken some projects that some people wouldn't. But for me, I think the Mama D probably is my favorite because I knew her and she crazy as hell, so that was cool. And then Tashira Simmons was probably my most difficult because of the fact that she was DMX's wife and going through the divorce. And, you know, you get to see two different sides of a situation. And I did a really, I'm actually, and it's going to movie now. I worked with a girl named Kadesha Martin. It's called The Kalen Ward Story. That's probably my most emotional book. It is, because the child died and you're doing the book and the people out, you know, it's such a major story. So that's probably, you know, one of my favorite things, you know, about is meeting the people and making it happen. So taking something from scratch and making it, you know, make it go national has been a good thing. I think that my crush would probably have been Common, and the most working person that hardest person that I ever seen work would have been Devon Franklin, believe it or not. So I've had some good things, and Rick Ross, Freeway Rick Ross, is probably the hardest working person that I've seen. Him and Devon don't care about the celebrity status. They stay until the last book is actually signed. So that's where I'm at. Now, on the woman side, my biggest favorite people that I ever want to work with is Victoria Christopher Murray and Rashonda Tate Billingsley. And they are huge now, but when I met them, they were huge. But I saw them from the very beginnings to what they are now. So
what are some key lessons you've learned about entrepreneurship since starting your own publishing company?
You'll go broke if you don't pay attention. You'll lose your whole shirt. You will go broke. You gotta realize that on the entrepreneur side, you may sell 1,000 books today, and you may sell one book tomorrow. You may sell no book. You know what I'm saying? So it just depends. You got to believe in yourself. And every day you got to get up and say to yourself, today my day, and today might not be your day. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes you may not make so much money, but you may make relationships. And that relationships then turn into money and other projects. So, it's been times I want to fight, you know, about my little money and stuff, and it doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? So you just got to, with growth comes the maturity. And then you learn your lesson. So it's a good experience if you have an entrepreneurial spirit and understand just business and what that means.
Okay. Can you share a memorable moment at a book signing with a fan?
Okay. I've gained a lot of weight since I started. I've been doing this for a long time. So there's a guy named Jihad, and it's J-I-H-A-D, excellent writer. He's like a brother. So I can give you two memorable things. So we used to go on book signings back in the day. We were in Memphis, and I forgot the name of the bookstore, but on the back of the picture, it was like when glamour shots, everybody get the glamour shot pictures or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I had probably gained about 15 or 20 pounds since I had did that thing. So it was a long line at my booth. And I was relatively probably like a year in old. Not long at all. So the line is long, and Jahad can, we're doing a contest and he can outsell anybody. So I'm wondering why this line is long. And the first lady told me that she wanted the author to sign the book, which would have been me, but I didn't look like the cover because the hair, there was a glam shot. And I was like 15, I laughed about it. We laughed about it together. So maybe about an hour later, this lady came up to me and she was like, I'm so proud of you and how you you made it through. So I was like, thank you. And I'm thinking she's talking about my backstory of what happened, like in college and everything else. Jahad is a jokester. And he told the lady that I used to be a prostitute. And then I turned my life over to God and started writing books. I'm looking at him and she's like, I want you to sign it for me and put your whole name and I'm going to tell the church about you. And I was so mad at him. So that was probably my most memorable moments was with him in the very beginning. Those two moments stand out, you know, in the beginning of my career.
Okay. What are your goals for expanding your book legacy?
Well, I'm in the movies now. So I'm blessed enough to we film March 19th. We're doing Sanctified, Holy, and Full of It. So I have a lot of the great Tubi actors on there. Tasha Page Lockhart, who won Sunday Best, she's in it. Diesel's in it. Alfonso Settle, Will Coleman, Nunu Thurman that plays in the Dirty D. I got a lot of good ones. And so I'm now turning my books into movies. And then I'm actually opening back up my publishing house to more independent people as well. My passion is, like I said previously, has always been to be there for the independent author and show them the way. And that's my next thing. Those are the two things that we're doing now.
Okay. Can you share some highlights from your docuseries, Living My Best Life? And what viewers can expect?
Okay, so here's the deal. We didn't do Living My Best Life. We started in it. Remember, COVID came. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't do it. I did go back right before COVID came, I went back to college and I played basketball. So I was helping my basketball team, the college kids, you know, do their thing and get them going. What I realized is, and I'm going to be honest with you, that these kids is different than what they used to be when I was a kid, and I don't want to do that shit. I just don't. You know what I'm saying? I helped them differently. What I did was when I went back to go and help them live my best life, I realized that my life was still, I said, a lot of living to do. So what I do college football, HBCU tours, and I took the kids, because I went to a small college called Payne College, and I took them like to Morehouse, Jackson State, New Orleans, Orlando, Florida Classic. I changed it. I did things that I thought they wanted to do versus things that I thought that they wanted to do. And so with that, I learned that I don't know. I love kids and I love growth, but I'm not a mom. I'm an auntie and I'm comfortable in that position. I don't think I can do the millennials and the Generation X's for long periods of time. I'm gonna be honest with you. So I knew what my forte was. I thought it was something that I really wanted to do like full time. So I started doing Black Girls Write. And those are like young ladies and young men that are interested in writing and interested in any format. It could be film, it could be books, it could be poetry, it could be open mic. And that's more of my lane, like spoken word and that kind of stuff, because I'm reaching my audience versus and I'm tapping into that by being a vessel to them versus me trying to encourage them or make them be writers. You understand what I'm saying? I'm working with who wants to work with me. And that's just me. I don't have kids, like I said. And going back, they're just a little different than what I thought they were. You know what I'm saying? And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, when we were younger, our parents, you know, they exposed us to things. I think you expose people to things to see what they like. And let them decide what they like, and then you can hone that skill. And so that's where I'm at now. So more podcasts and that kind of stuff to the people that like that field. But I didn't. My living my best life didn't work out the way that I thought it was, and that's fine. We ended up doing something different, which we're doing now, are the podcasts, and we're filming more of the daily things that we do. That you're never too old to go back, But I'm not necessarily at my best life. I'm just realizing what I like now. I didn't think that I would ever do movies. I thought I was always going to be a book person, and I'm not. I came from radio. I love podcasts, and I'm actually loving the movie side right now. And so that's where I'm at. And if that's considered living my best life, then that's what I'm doing now.
Okay. Now, I know you mentioned about the Generation X and the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
If you had an opportunity to go back and talk to the younger you, what would you say?
Ooh, okay. I came from middle class, mm-hmm. and I loved to be in the projects in the hood. I loved it. Thought they had more fun. And my mom used to, it was never nothing wrong with projects in the hood. You know, you got great people that come from there. But I think as we are attracted to the worst thing sometimes. You know what I'm saying? That's what got me in my situation that I was in college, because I was attracted. I loved a bad boy with a story. You understand what I'm saying? And so for my younger self, I would say just enjoy it. My sister is totally different than me. She's the cool nerd. And so, don't get me wrong, I had a lot of fun. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't change anything about my life that I had. But what I would say is to my younger self is slow down and really see life for what it is and enjoy the moment. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to rush to do anything really fast. It's going to be there when it's time. That's what I would say to my younger self.
Okay. How do you balance your personal life with your professional endeavors?
I don't. I've just started. My father died in November. And so, and that's probably made me realize then, because he's a pusher. So I worked, he always understood it. The more I worked, the better it was. He loved to brag on his daughter. But I do think the balance is, if I'm in, like, say, out of town somewhere, I try to find something fun to do so it makes it memorable. If I'm there for work and I got an extra day, I'll see the city for what it, you know, just different, the sightseeing, maybe a restaurant, that sort of thing, to give me some balance. I travel with my partner, Rodney, all the time. So we try to maybe catch a good restaurant or see something different. That's really my balance. And now that I'm going into movies, I'm back on the grind again. And movies is such a strenuous industry that the pre-production is so, it's just harder than the production itself. You understand what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I'm still learning that balance, and I haven't really mastered it yet. But I'm enjoying the ride this time. Versus before, I was always so anxious with the books that when I got books down pat, I love books. You know what I'm saying? Books are my life. But I've learned to actually enjoy the time, because you'll wake up one day and you'll realize you got a lot of events, but you don't have a lot of good, you know, other than work memories, you don't have any. So I build them as I go now. I try to make everything, you know, lasting. And I'm very grateful and thankful.
Okay. First, I want to offer my condolences on the loss of your father. I know that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
You know, I lost my father at a younger age. Mm-hmm. And people tell you time heals everything. That's not true. It helps you cope with it.
Right.
You know,
right.
I've coped with it, you know, because I know I couldn't get him back, you know.
Right. You're so true. And thank you so much. Thank you.
No problem. So what motivates you to keep pushing your boundaries and pushing new ventures?
I like new things. So my partner, Rodney, he likes food and he's a great cook. I like books. So we do like Chat and Choose. Book boo. We had a large bookstore in Atlanta, book boutique. We're doing something in Columbia now. I had something in New Orleans. We had to shut down when my dad died. Like I said, we didn't do Tampa, and I'm glad we didn't. We're gonna open, you know, do something different. So different. We try to find different innovative ways to do stuff. I'm hosting Rashonda in Columbia, February 25th. With her new book, Queen of Sugar. And so we don't just make it a book event or a book reading. We try to make everything an adventure, something memorable, something new, you know, that everybody can remember outside of just being having a book signing. You know what I'm saying? And that's just what it is now. You have to be creative in everything you do. And you, like you said, you write in all genres. And so, you know, us, we, for blacks, we like urban. Most, you know, we like urban, we like romance, and we like a lot of self-help. But the science fictions and those type of books, we haven't really touched on those as much. And I'd like to adventure in some of that. Rodney wants to do more sci-fi, just different genres for everyone. I'd like to touch it on a children book side, because I believe that children books are where we first start out at, you know what I'm saying, in developing what we like. So, you know, those are the type of things that we're doing now.
Okay. Since you're talking about children and your journey with them, can you discuss the importance of mentorship in your journey?
I think it's very important. My entire life, I've had a coach in some way or another, whether it be basketball or my college, my principals or my deans at the colleges. You can impress. Kids are very impressionable. And I realized when I went back to college, people knew my name or they read the books or they knew something, and they were impressionable. And you at that level that you are, you help them make a decision as to what route and which way they want to go. So I didn't realize that. I was always one of those people that I'm really not trying to be your mentor. I'm just trying to live my life. And if you like it, I'll help you. I have a very big heart. But I do realize going on as older that I get that we're responsible for our next generation. We are responsible for it, even if we don't want to be. If you want change, you're going to help them make change. And this newer generation, that even though I say I didn't want kids, they smart, they're intelligent, they think outside of the box. They want it now, and those are good things. So I think as I teach them things, I learn from them as well. And I'm here for it.
Okay. In closing, do you have any last comments that you want to share or any journeys that you're about to embark on?
Like I said, we're going into movies now, opening up some new book and restaurant. If you like more docs concepts, DC, where it's restaurant and books. And I just want to see where books, music, audio, you know, it's all a part of our literary world or our arts and things. And I'm here for it to see how it evolves. And I don't want to be like Blockbuster videos, you know what I'm saying, where it's done after the video. VH has changed the CDs every step of the way that it changes. I want to be here to change with it. So now I'm learning, and I'm teaching, and I'm learning, and that's where I'm at right now. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, can you share with everyone your social medias or any way that they can get in contact with you?
I'm old school book. So Instagram is really my bookstore. So it's Book Boutique ATL, but you can always reach me there because I'm always answering it. And Facebook, I am Monique S. Hall. It's several pages, but the one with my braids, that's me. And it's always full, but you can inbox me and I will respond back and make room for you guys. Or I either make a phone call. I'm not a Twitter person. I think it's Monique S. Hall. But this year, next month, I really have to get a real Instagram with my name on it, a real Facebook, which I do have, and a real Twitter. So I'm always going to be Monique S. Hall. And you can find me on any of those formats.
Yes, and I want to thank you because you definitely responded back when I asked you to come on the show. And I thought it was going to be a while before I heard anything back, but it was pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm up. I mean, I'm one of those people. I learned from Rashonda, Nikki, and Victoria. They respond. No matter how busy they are, they respond. So if I'm up, if I'm not on Facebook, I check my Facebook constantly. So I respond back, and I hope I'm always that way. I'm always able to be responsive to the person that did, because that's what happened to me. They gave it to me, and I want to continue to give that. So if you don't hear from me right away, it's only because I'm on set, because even when I'm writing, I'm checking my Facebook. And thank you for having me. We definitely need platforms like this in order to keep us going. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in tonight, and thank Monique again for appearing on the show. And this is another episode of The Voice Behind the Pen. Good night, everyone.
Thank you and good night.